Okay. Any questions so far? Yeah.
I'd love to know the answer to this tomorrow, and I'll just speak to myself why my self-destructive, self-loathing behaviors and actions bring me satisfaction for about however long for a short period of time, but why does that bring me some kind of happiness or satisfaction?
You know, I was going to ask you that question. Yeah, after we talked yesterday, what ideas do you have? Why does that bring satisfaction?
I think all I know is that it does bring satisfaction, but only for about an hour or two.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite dangerous because you get really attached to that short period of time, so when it's done, you do it again. And so you sort of keep doing the cycle of these things. This is the only thing that can be bringing happiness. But I think for some, it has lots of distractions from the things that you really need to be focusing on, things that you think are much more, you think have a very negative effect on you, and they probably wouldn't if you try to sort of be aware of how you're feeling and be open and mindful about it. That would only sort of something that takes you very far away from that. But I think for one of the behaviors is it allows me to see what another kind of pain is. So it takes me away from the pain that originally led me to this action. But this action is you get used to the pain after a while, and it becomes sort of averts your attention,
mm-hmm.
because you're experiencing a very different form of, you feel you're experiencing quite a different form of pain that you can deal with because you can stop it whenever you want to. The kind of pain where you can start, you can stop. You think you can have control over it, but you don't after a while because you keep reverting to it for the exact same reason. So it's just like a cycle that is quite, mm-hmm. It's dangerous after a while.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It definitely, you think that it's helping you in that way. And I don't really know whether that's my interpretation, but I see so many people in this world who do all sorts of behaviors and thoughts and say all sorts of things that they may not, do certain actions that I do, and they may, but it all goes down to the fact that why is there a sort of sense of satisfaction when we beat on ourselves? When we say, I'm bad. Like, that's just that right there is why do we choose to do that? Why does it make us feel better in some way?
Okay, so you're saying, like, when there's a lot of mental pain, that then inflicting physical pain takes your mind away from the mental pain to the physical pain, and then you have a sense of control because you can start the physical pain and stop the physical pain when you want to.
Yeah.
So it takes you away from the mental pain.
It's like saying, see, pain doesn't say all the time, I can stop this pain, this pain can be stopped.
Mm-hmm.
This pain can be stopped,
Okay. So kind of like I don't know what to do with my mental pain, mm-hmm. but at least with the physical pain I know what to do.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, people have problems with drugs, and alcohol, you think?
Mm-hmm.
You have problems with alcohol.
Yeah,
is that kind of the same?
Yeah, totally, totally the same. Only, you can get drunk enough to blot it all out, and you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
For a while. And then you have to deal with questions of what it did, why it was gone. But, so it is also a self-perpetuating cycle, but it's familiar.
Yeah.
Hmm?
Cigarettes, same thing.
Yeah.
Cigarettes, yeah. Yeah. So it's like doing another behavior that inflicts more pain and more whatever on us that takes us away from the mental pain, but then it has that behavior has negative repercussions again, which bring us more self-loathing. So then we gotta do that behavior again.
But what it all does is reinforce that
I'm
a miserable scum of a worm, and I'm right, and I can prove it again and again and again. I think that's the satisfaction. I don't want to be wrong, I'm right.
Make yourself right. Yeah. I'm going to prove to everybody that I'm not worthwhile. Because people who tell me I am are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And look at what I'm doing with my life. I'm really not worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proving it. And I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the satisfaction that I'm right. Huh. Does that...
Well, yeah, I mean, I started smoking cigarettes. I think that I definitely started it for that reason. Because I wanted to make a point to the people around me who I felt who were, whatever they were doing, I wanted to see. I'm going to go out and F myself up because for some reason I'm proving myself right, but it seems like I was really just proving them right. Like, we have an issue with you, so... they have an issue with me, so okay, fine. I'm just going to go out and I'm going to mess myself up because that's just the way I am,
Yeah.
But and it's too bad because, cigarettes have, for me, always had a numbing effect.
Mm-hmm.
So I just saying that as alcohol, has a that numbing effect where you just sort of forget and fall into a...
It reminds me of first of this person who had that trigeminal neuralgia, that month that we met at the conference.
Oh, yeah.
I knew there was a guy who came when I was in PT school who had that talk to our class. It's a really incredible amount of pain, physical pain. He used to burn himself with cigarettes because that's how he could get rid of the pain. And so there was a way that one pain could kind of take away the other ones. And what you were saying, really made a lot of sense. But what I was wondering is what you thought. It just seems like that it's people don't have the original thing that you're trying to get away from, that people get so far away from that they don't even know what it is anymore, and we don't have the tools. I mean, the Dharma has the tools, but we didn't have any, there weren't any tools. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So what else are you going to do? You're doing something. Just not.
Yeah, you gotta do something. And there's there's a drug, there's alcohol, there's a cigarette, whatever.
But even don't you get so far away from what the original thing is that you can't even find it anymore?
But I think you know the original thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think our minds are so clouded, all we know is how we're agitated, or we get in a run, but what are we going to come, or what do you think, even how it's the pain? 9 years of therapy.
Yeah.
How many years of Dharma before you even notice that's really what it is?
Mm-hmm.
And people are so proud of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I would yell up until now, I pretty much had screaming sessions at a counselor,
mm-hmm.
or a therapist, who would say, what's making you unhappy?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd yell at them, saying, I don't know. I don't know. I can't find it. I don't know. Nothing's making me unhappy. Because like I couldn't, the first thing, I had no idea why I was so angry with myself. Wrap my head around it. As you said, you're so clouded, it's just not there.
Mm.
It's just not there.
It's can't even find it. All there is the mental pain.
It increases your frustration with that.
Oh, is that the sadness in and of itself? Once you're at, I'm assuming once I, the first time I was asked, that was causing you pain, caused me so much suffering because I had to start, you know, figuring out why I was doing all these things to myself. You know, that was really, really upsetting because I couldn't, because I was so, you know, deep into, you know, that, the term you said that you actually.
Poor quality view.
Poor quality view. Yeah, I was so involved with that poor quality view.
That you can't, that you don't even know why you're unhappy
mm-hmm.
with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something started, but it was so long ago. Now if you're feeding off the last emotion you just had, you know, maybe the next one could get worse, and then the next one could get worse, and then the next one. And then you keep going and going and going, you just took one and drained, waiting for that. And put it all to go away.
Mm-hmm. You know, you really don't, you really get attached to the identity.
Mm-hmm.
So
you get attached to it?
The identity.
Yeah.
You can verify, you can verify, you can give all the credibility you want to that poor quality too. It is who you are, it is your existence.
Yeah.
It's safety.
I've been working at this writing center and do that for the kids who are in their teens who were involved in the writing center, not just their own community. They're all very sensitive with what they call slam poetry. And I would have times I would have to, I would take pictures for the newsletter, and it was cool and you were accepted if you had self-destructive behavior. If you were an alcoholic, if you were a sex addict, if you cut yourself, if you did drugs, that was sort of like, if you didn't do that, you were being, oh, you're too innocent. If you're not interesting, you're not an interesting person. So they would get,
oh my goodness,
very theatrical, like poems in front of people they didn't know about. You know, having sex and, you know, having issues with drugs and cutting and committing suicide, and it seemed almost like you can't, you're like, you weren't a good writer if you couldn't do this kind of poetry and this sort of depression. Because you saw these people, you see them suffering so much.
One of the guys I correspond with in prison that you write to, Nan Salsa, he's been in prison, you know, for repeated rape and repeated escape. And he told me that he, you know, they'd often put him in the hole, you know, for long periods of time. And he would just be kind of getting himself together and starting to feel good, and then he would self-sabotage. And that's the expression he used, you know, I would sabotage myself. Yeah. And just, yeah. And it's interesting because I wrote to another inmate who, this guy's really done some good work on himself, a young guy. Who's in for life imprisonment because he murdered somebody when he was 16. But, you know, I was asking him about it, about this kind of behavior. And, well, actually, he's written about it. He's very public. James, you know, the articles James has written that many of you have read. Yeah? Did you read the one when he talked about when he was 5 and his stepmother put the poop in his mouth and yeah, and just not feeling, you know, stepmother put his own feces in his mouth, and And then later when they were riding in the car, his sister smelled it and said, what is that? And he said, just the feeling of shame, you know, that came from that. And then they repeated things like that when he was little. And what he explained to me, you know, because he would see his own self-destructive behavior, is he said, if I didn't feel dirty, it didn't feel normal. So when I started to feel good about myself, it didn't feel normal. So I would do something horrible because it just felt normal to feel lousy. You know? And, you know, and the way he explained it, it's like you could really see that he understood that. You know, that whole cycle of, you know, okay, if I do this, it feels familiar. That was the word he used. It feels familiar. Yeah, feeling good about myself doesn't feel familiar, so I can't do it for very long. I've got to do something that feels more familiar. And this was the exact same, you know, same pattern. The other guy called it self-sabotage. And, you know, we all have our own terminology. But it's that same kind of thing. It's unfamiliar feeling that you're okay. And so you go to what's familiar, even if it's painful. Yeah. And so I think here is also where, you know, if we realize that that's one of the issues in it, it's just the familiarity, you know, of feeling down on ourselves. And begin to see, okay, this is just a habit. It's not who I am. You know, it's not who I am. It's just a habit. And I'm gonna, you know, habits are just due to conditioning. So I can recondition, you know. I might have a lot of conditioning so that it feels normal to feel dirty or, you know, that I'm unworthwhile. But I've got to recondition myself and get used to the other feeling, which is scary at first because we're not used to it. But why not? You know, why not recondition? It's scary, so what? You know, be a little bit courageous and let's recondition ourselves just so we allow ourselves more and more periods of time of feeling good about ourselves. It becomes a more familiar feeling. You know, and the other one becomes less familiar.
Mm-hmm. It's also, I don't know, something I realized when I was going to retreat, and maybe it's too subtle to where we are in the conversation, but I was looking at, you know, what is my, that push-pull, pushing away from narcissism, you know, what is that? And realizing that in my years of drinking, which was a long time ago, but there was something in trashing people who were virtuous.
In what? Trashing people who were virtuous.
You know, somehow also part of one of this poetry thing, along with, you know, being an alcoholic and being in this crowd, and, you know, this is how we live, and, you know, most people who don't are really boring, they're really vanilla people, they're blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So having to really think about purifying all of the negative karma created in my thought in regards to people who were virtuous. Mm-hmm. You know, that huge, long since forgotten thoughts.
Uh-huh.
But really looking at the karma that's set up in that, just that jealousy.
Yeah.
People who have a better life or people who are nice, they don't remember. You know, trying to give myself a tag. Well, it's ugly, but.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so it's I'm right and I really am lousy. And I don't want to be one of those virtuous people because they're just horrible and disgusting and boring and prudish and blah, and righteous and blah, and out of it, and, you know, they can't win this poetry contest, and, you know, and trashing them. And the fact that that way of thinking is stemming from jealousy, which we don't realize, is, of course, because we think we're right. You know, if I'm bad, I'm going to make virtuous people badder. They're going to be worse. Yeah. And then by thinking that way, that creates karma. Yeah. It creates a mental habit and it creates karma. And the importance of purifying those thoughts of ill will against good qualities and against people who possess those good qualities.
And in some way also by the slam poetry, you're actually trashing your own virtue.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so sabotaging any of the qualities that could be wanting to arise and creating that perpetuation to arise.
Yeah.
In life because of that.
Yeah.
You take a failure then because you just failed. You just failed.
Yeah. Failure is now success. Yeah.
Making it hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really funny that I had a really difficult time because I wanted to fit in, but they thought I was this perfect, like, because I never get up and talk about my issues, and I wouldn't go out and smoke. You know, with them in the group, because I thought that was sort of weird to me, and so they would always sort of publicly start teasing me about how innocent and how much of a little girl I am, and like, you know,
like what?
Like the worst quality.
Right.
I felt honored in a sense. They thought of me that way, and I was like, no.
So that's why you were around them. You didn't go around them so that you could join in their festivities of slamming on yourself, and maybe you were around them just because you knew that. I mean, I think it was probably all way over exaggerated. I could see doing that and really not having any real problems just doing that for your attention, and you with real problems can go there.
I mean, it is amazing, you know, it's really amazing sort of, I guess in terms of artistically, how they put these things together. But I was talking to the writer from mine, and all of them actually really don't like slam poetry, because for the reason that we're talking about, because they think that this confessional, this exaggerated confessional, yeah, confessional is really not useful at all.
I've been in a couple of communities, kind of both the one to college. One where some poetry was really good, actually wasn't much big enough, and it was building an identity out of my anger and out of my angst. And it's like, this is me. Mm-hmm. And not just going out and making art, I'm going out and showing you that I'm, you know, my identity is my anger and my angst and my pain, and there's nothing else to me. Mm-hmm. And I felt like there's so many people, and so many people are really close to me. Just, and that's really how the body is felt. And it's just like when everybody's in that cycle, it's really hard to see anything clearly at all, because it's like, I am this person who harms himself, and I am an angry person who, you know, who hates the government and thinks that that's it, that's what it is.
That's painful, isn't it? We each have our own variety. Yeah.
I'm sure that's pretty common too.
Yeah.
Maybe we just don't go up on stage, but man, that's just. It's interesting because
I have to work at identifying with some of that. I have not had a lot of real angst in my life, or, you know, when I was thinking about that, I've done lots of different things in the course of my life, but, you know, nothing that for me has felt, some addictive type of thing. And, you know, probably the things that I think about that are, at least earlier on, like sports and things, but they were normalized things, you know, so it's kind of like whatever. So in some ways, I have to stretch, I have to kind of think about, okay, you know, what is that for me? Where is that angst? Because it doesn't express itself, or I don't feel it in the way, you know, that I hear a lot of that. That's not, you know, a lot of my experience. So whether that's just kind of my own method for numbing that. But sometimes I have to look a little bit deeper. It's not those things that are real obvious that I, you know, want to go smoke or drink or do that. Mm-hmm. So I have to be more discerning about what that is. And I'm also, what I recognize about that is, even though I feel very disclosing, there's probably those parts of me that I don't express, or they are more subtle that you have to go to. Or, you know, the purification process, like doing the Vajrasattva, especially in retreat, was really good because I could think about not just what was manifesting right now, but be able to be, like as Barbara was saying, what are the conditions, what are the things that are latent, you know, just kind of a little understanding of what karma might be about to go, you know, to not be complacent about that, or to really be present with the things that maybe I don't experience consciously, but that have that sense of awareness that they are there, that they are latent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And create some, not kind of a healthy fear that's there, because on the surface, a lot of it feels pretty solid, or, you know, it's kind of like where, that place where I think of it as that place where we all lose our footing. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's drinking or drugs or feeling, you know, I think even feeling sometimes really, you know, self-confident, not you know, puffed up, but that sense of privilege. In some ways, I feel privileged. You know, I don't feel privileged by my status in society or growing up. That was very, you know, middle class. But I feel privileged in some ways in terms of what I would think of as the misfortunes of my life, of this life. So it requires me a different kind of reflection on a lot of what, you know, I hear.
Yeah. And also, I think when we exit left in a societally accepted way, then it's easier not to see our pain. Mm-hmm. You know, because some of the ways we exit left are praised by society.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that's why, for example, you know, shopping as an addiction. Yeah. I mean, just to bring that into light and saying shopping is as an addiction, it's like, well, what's wrong with shopping? We've been taught to shop. It's supposed to make you feel good. It's societally accepted. So it's hard for people to see over shopping as a way of exiting left from our pain.
Or sports, you know, whether participating or observing, such a societal kind of
Yeah, it's very numbing, isn't it? Sports completely takes you away, or you're watching movies, or sex, or, you know, all these things just take us away, don't they? What's happening, Eric? You want to share some?
I'm not sure yet.
Okay.
Do you find your anger when you play sports? I played a lot of sports, and I realized at some point that it didn't affect you, that you're it's harder for women to express anger. Mm-hmm. I saw this a lot in working in sport, actually. The guys, but it's harder for women sometimes to express anger. And I found that partly there was one part of playing sports where I could take my anger and put it into this physical motion, like just vent it out physically.
Mm-hmm.
I watched myself do it. I didn't try to hurt people. I would just try to put it into the energy.
I experienced that some way, and it was a way. I mean, for me, most of that was like playing basketball.
Right.
It was very interactive,
yeah,
moment to moment.
Push people around. So that guy takes Woody Mayer, the guy at Ohio State, takes the chair and starts throwing, and then he got fired. Football coach, Bobby Knight. It's okay until it's actually very skewed. It's very skewed. I worked in that realm. It's very skewed, but you're so in it, you don't even see it.
I had two parts. Part where I could recognize. The other part was there was a real healthy part of that. I realized when, like, playing sports was a very good stress. I mean, not that it wasn't acting at anger, but it was a way for things that I maybe didn't do that I could really channel my energy. It would be like taking a long hike. It was a way that I really could channel that energy and not come out and blast somebody else. But I would really focus that energy. I wouldn't be necessarily just about being angry playing, but it was a dissipation of that energy in a way that was in some ways felt really hard. I mean, it was good.
Almost in mind all day. I find it easier for something like doing laps and riding bikes for a really long time. You have all this nervous energy and you can just channel that nervous energy into one thing.
It's interesting. I mean, just talking about it in some ways, the part that was different for me with that is the people that I normally interacted with were my friends, and so I really liked the social element. Mm-hmm. So these were people that even if we did get, somebody got kind of over the top, it was where you could really come. So I tended not to be running or swimming, in that I wanted the social interaction too, that it was an interesting venue for what I wanted in that container, and I can appreciate people who are runners, or swimmers.
The thing about swimming and running is that I found it less conducive towards channeling anger and more conducive towards channeling the nervous energy or the hyperness and trying to calm yourself by, in water and just focusing on.
Yeah.
And
but with competitive sports, there's a person to put your anger on.
So what happens when you get swimming and you start actually competing? Yeah.
Okay.
I don't get them at all. I'm just taking a nap.
You mean like when you're upset or angry or something, go to sleep?
I don't ever have that experience where I've had so much energy that I need to. I have a channel to sports. It's like, I can go play football? That sounds like a lot of work.
I'll dive into my bed.
I do that too, especially when I feel like I don't have time, and so I don't do the physical activity, and then I just go into the bed, and I find that to cloud the mind more. Rather than subtle mind in sports.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I do a lot of sports, when I get really tired and don't go to sleep, it's still a lot better. Because then I'm not using the sleep for the escape, I'm just using it to rest the body.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you stressed out or depressed or angry, and it's like, I don't see the world, and go to bed. I do, you know, I go to bed and I say, fuck the world, you know, the thought. And I fuck myself, I hate myself, fuck the world, and go to bed and sleep. And then I wake up, and I look at my alarm, I look at my clock, I personally, and I say, fuck, I won't go back. You're not supposed to put on a lot. It's destructive. The bad is smoking.
Yeah. Because you wake up and your mind's just not clear.
I've never done that. Well, maybe I have done that, but that's not a common thing either. If you just don't have that nervous energy, you do that. You burn out. You know, I've been upset, we're having problems. You don't sleep, you know, but that doesn't prove mostly trying to find the energy that didn't thing. So nervous energy might be good for me.
Okay, that's quite a bit.